Rip Van Wagner from the lovely village of Catskill, and you're listening to WGXC, ACRA, Catskill and More, 90.7 FM.
Reverend Kim L. Singletary, pastor for the Overcomers Ministries International Church of Hudson, New York, inviting you to listen to There's a Bright Side Somewhere. Every first and third Wednesday of the month, we'll be featuring a diverse offering of gospel music from across the wide Christian music spectrum. If you like listening to the tried and true and want to hear some new music too, I have all of that right here for you. Special studio guests join me to share their stories and views, and I bring it with my own spiritual social commentary relevant for today. So join me as I host There's a Bright Side Somewhere every first and third Wednesday at 11 o'clock a.m. right here on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hi, I'm Al Criazzo. Catskill Mountain Housing is looking to help income-qualified homeowners in Greene County. We have funding available from the state of New York to pay for your needed repairs, like a new roof or a furnace replacement. Whatever you need to keep your house a safe, secure, and affordable environment for your family, call me at area code 518-943-6700 or drop by our office at 448 Main Street in Catskill.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Pink Zebra, the company that allows you to fragrance your personal space with special sprinkles created from scented soft soy wax. They do home parties, events, one-on-one shopping, and more. Information about Pink Zebra is available at area code 518-567-9420 or online at pinkzebrahome.com/sprinkles from Lacey. Pink Zebra. Change your fragrance. Change your life.
Lamb chowder followed by beefsteak on rye, pumpkin pie, whipped cream and coffee. I want a green salad on the side. Don't forget the french fried pizza pie.
Good afternoon. This is Eating It in the Hudson Valley, and I'm your host, Phyllis Segura. Welcome, listeners far and dear, those listening live and later to the archived show. Today's program will be a slightly different format. There is no guest. It's not that I was feeling inhospitable, but the guest who was booked had some personal problems or issues, so we moved on. This will be a very intimate hour with just me and you, the listener. I've been wanting to get more into the food report since there usually isn't sufficient time to read any of it. I do put it on the Facebook page of Eating It in the Hudson Valley, and they're all there. And please join that page as I post things there daily. There was one post, well, we'll get into that a little later, about the senators getting some of the money from, well, yeah, you'll hear about it. And I'm going to do the food report first off, but I'll tell you a little bit more about the show. I've been wanting to give you more recipes and cooking tips all along, so I hope you have pen and paper handy, because I'm going to go through a bunch of my recipes for you. I've actually been a personal and private chef, and in that role, I've developed numerous recipes, so we're going to have some fun with that. Actually, when I didn't know anything about cooking at all and was at university studying art, my roommate at the time would recite recipes to me. I was somewhat able to visualize the process, and it filtered into my learning to cook. So radio has that capability of visualization. The hot medium, as McLuhan said. And since we're talking about Marshall McLuhan, I found something that he wrote that describes a radio experience. It might still be apt. Well, let me read it to you. They danced, entranced to the tribal drum of radio that extended their central nervous system to create depth involvement for everybody. I live right inside the radio when I listen. I more easily lose myself in radio than in a book, said a voice from a radio pole. The power of radio to involve people in depth is manifested in its use during homework by youngsters and by many other people who carry transistor sets. This is really old transistor sets, right? In order to provide a private world for themselves amidst crowds. Well, I guess people still do absolutely listen in there with their headsets. And here's a little poem by the German dramatist Bertolt Brecht. You little box held to me when escaping, so that your valves should not break, carried from house to ship, from ship to train, so that my enemies might go on talking to me near my bed to my pain. The last thing at night, the first thing in the morning, of their victories and of my cares. Promise me not to go silent all of a sudden. That's how Brecht felt about radio. Radio affects most people intimately, person to person, offering a world of unspoken communication between writer, speaker, and the listener. This is the immediate aspect of radio, a private experience. The subliminal depths of radio are charged with the resonating echoes of tribal horns and antique drums. This is inherent in the very nature of this medium, with its power to turn the psyche and society into a single echo chamber. How about that? So we're going to stick with the intimate qualities of radio today. No interviewing, just you and me. So with that, let's have some food report and then some recipes and that we can envision and you can actualize with the auditory and sensory effects in your own kitchen for your friends to gather together and share and connect. The food report, October 2018. This is from Politico on 9/13. The Farm Bill. We're still talking about the Farm Bill. The Farm Bill had a September 30th deadline. If it isn't settled soon, which it hasn't been, it will fall back on farm and food policies set in 2014. The tensions are that the House is insistent on implementing new work requirements for SNAP, that's the food stamp program, which would sink the whole bill. The differences are in the two chambers. The House Agricultural Chairman, Mike Conaway, and Senate Agricultural Ranking Member Debbie Stabenow are having a lot of friction and a public standoff. Hey, it still hasn't been resolved. On 10/3, also from Politico, this is good news, Brad Paisley and his wife Kimberly, now you might know who he is, I actually don't, I think she's an actress. Kimberly are opening a new grocery in Nashville for families who are referred by nonprofit government agencies to shop free of charge for a year. The largest architectural firm in Nashville, Earl Swenson Associates, will donate their design services. And for more information, you can visit thestore.org. Actually, Santa Barbara, California has had a 100-year-old free grocery shop called Unity Shop. So it's not a new idea, but it's new to people. It's new to us around here. We don't have any free groceries. I mean, there's the food bank, but that's quite different. Also from the New Food Economy on 10/5, there's been a beef recall. You should all know about that. There's some company called JBS Tolleson, T-O-L-L-E-S-O-N, and with over 6.9 million pounds of beef have been recalled for salmonella. It's the largest single recall since the famous, might be famous to some people, Rancho recall of 2014. It's for ground beef, some burger patties, and sirloin trimmings in 16 states. It includes some JBS grass-fed beef. So don't be fooled by the fact that it's grass-fed. It can still have salmonella. It just means that the cows eat grass instead of being bulked up with corn. Some packages were sold over 2 months ago, so they might have been eaten already. So you have to check with your local provider to find out what the story is in your location. Apparently, also, Obama-era food policies are being firmed up and implemented. Hey, the FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb has taken a measured approach to deregulation. They've renamed it the Nutrition Innovation Strategy, but it's largely a repackaging of the food policy work of the Obama administration. He's calling it deregulation by regulating. What that seems to mean is that they deregulate in one area, such as drugs and medical devices, by regulating in another, such as food. But who really knows? Balin J. Lineken is a food lawyer in Seattle. He wrote a book titled Biting the Hand That Feeds Us. It's from Island Press in 2016. And he says regulations often prescribe sustainable food practices. The description of his book is such that it explains in an accessible and entertaining way, too often our legal system not only fails to protect us, but even undermines our efforts. While I don't always agree with Balin Lineken, I appreciate his willingness to challenge assumptions about food regulations. His book is an important contribution to the food policy discourse. And that was a recommendation, actually, by Michelle Simon, author of Appetite for Profit, who is the executive director of Plant-Based Foods Association. From Politico on 10/3, trade aid from USDA. They doled out $53 million already, and direct payments of $78 million are on the way. The initial $4.7 billion in direct aid to corn, soybean, wheat, sorghum, cotton, pork, and dairy farmers, plus growers of sweet cherries and almonds. The bulk of the aid, and you know why this is happening, I didn't backtrack, I'm sort of assuming you know this, that there's a trade war going on and tariffs have been put on all sorts of food products, just such as the ones I just listed. So to counteract that with farmers, the Trump administration is going to dole out millions of dollars to farmers to cover the trade deficit that's happening there. A bulk of the aid has gone to farmers in Iowa, Kansas, Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin, and nearly 60,000 producers have applied since September 4th. But two senators, Grassley, you know him, don't you? The Republican from Iowa, and Tester, a Democrat from Montana, are seeking payments. That's what has been reported by the Washington Post. Large industrial farms now account for more than half of all production. Remember that sentence. Large industrial farms now account for more of half of all production. That's food production. Should I say it again? No, I won't. That's where our food production is going. It's going away from small farmers, family farms, and so forth, and going to large industrial farms. This, my friends, is not a good thing. Politico on 10/2, the NAFTA agreement, mostly about wheat and dairy, the new agreement, ends Canada's grain grading system where U.S. wheat and other foreign grains are marked as low grade. The agreement wipes out Canada's milk price classes 6 and 7, and 6 months after taking effect. It will expand U.S. access to Canadian dairy market by 3.59% and helps American dairy producers compete internationally. They, in return, get more U.S. chickens and eggs. I don't think they even wanted them. There's more on that a little bit later. Politico also on 10/3. The trade deal with Mexico and Canada, here it is, also forbids them to enter into a trade deal with a non-market economy. That means China or any other place that's not in the agreement. They'd be required before entering into negotiations with China or similar to give notice that they're doing that. It also involves pressuring U.S. companies to move manufacturing out of China. The U.S. is constantly threatening China to bash it with full tariffs, with more duties and more tariffs. Trump's political base, farmers and ranchers, are calling to end the barrage of retaliatory duties and tariffs, but there's no end in sight. Canada, here's the other news, is willing to remove their grading system that designates U.S. wheat as low grade, meaning it's meant for animal feed, not human consumption. Well, that's been taken off the table. Data collected from U.S. farms don't actually reflect the current agriculture sector. So when you read the figures, it's not reflecting what's really going on, which I said earlier is that there's more industrial farms. The method used to portray farms as self-contained, family-operated businesses and not equipped to handle the growing complexity of the farming industry, which is more mega farms or more industrial agribusinesses, which are the same thing. The Environmental Working Group reports that there is nitrate contamination in many public water systems. Some of the communities affected cannot afford a treatment system. This is mostly found in farming areas in the Midwest and California. Nitrate is a key fertilizer chemical that has been linked to developmental problems in children and poses cancer risks in adults. So it's the runoff from the fertilizers. I'm sorry there's all this bad news. We will get to recipes at some point if you still want to eat after all this. There is a culture fear in California's Central Valley where agriculture relies on immigrant workers. That's all I'm going to say about that. A culture of fear. Culture of fear. We are moving into the culture of fear. We want the culture of peace and love. Let's go back to peace and love. We were making fun of peace and love, but hey, something to be said for it. Oh, and with that, today is the anniversary of John Lennon's birthday. Talking about peace and love, all we want is peace and love. And it's also the death day for Che Guevara today, October 9th. In D.C., Washington, D.C., that is, the city council has repealed an initiative to raise the minimum wage. Voters approved the initiative, but the restaurant industry warned it would hurt the restaurant scene. It looks as though the pressure worked, since the city council was able to override the voters. So we say, vote, vote, vote. But then again, something can also happen that overrides that. I'm looking for something else that I wrote here that's today's news, and I don't see it. Maybe I'll find it later. Oh, yeah, here it is. And from Edible Manhattan, about seeds, Ken Green, who started the Hudson Valley Seed Library 15 years ago, and Shanine Siegel partnered with the Hudson Valley Farm Hub to replenish sacred crop varieties that won't get commercialized. And they also partnered with the St. Regis Mohawk Akwesasne Tribe. So you might want to get in touch with the Hudson Valley Seed Library and find out what's going on over there, along with the Farm Hub. I know that they did this planting last year, and they're probably doing it again. Then a little bit more news here, before we're going to have some music, because this is some heavy information here. Okay, also, going back to what's happening with doling out the food, food banks are going to receive pork, apples, and cheese, 1.2 billion agriculture products. The government agreed to buy from farmers to ease the pain of the tariffs. So this tariff story is a big story that's going on now. And it's going to go, the food banks are going to be receiving these over 18 months. And there's approximately over 200 food banks that we'll be receiving. And I wonder how many food banks there are in the whole country. I think that there's really only about 200. And they've been sorely missing their products. So pork, apples, and cheese. We don't know what kind of apples. We don't know if they've been sprayed. We don't know anything about them. And the cheese, we don't know what kind. And the pork, well, the poor piggies, they're having a hard time too. Politico today said in 2014... law expired. Oh, I see what I'm saying here. The farm bill, which has not been decided on yet, actually expired October 1st. I think earlier I said September 30th. And we'll go back to the 2014 law soon. Negotiations to replace it are going nowhere. Iowa farmers sent a letter noting that inaction left 40 orphan programs without any funding. So what happens when they don't continue these programs? The funding stops. I think that's what they like to do. The Department of Homeland Security posted the latest rule to deny green cards to any immigrants who receive SNAP or other welfare programs. So beware. The FDA, this is sort of good news, banned some synthetic flavors that are linked to cancer. And what isn't linked to cancer these days? They are widely used in processing foods, but not included on the ingredient list, except as an artificial flavor. Artificial flavor. We don't want any artificial flavors. And they, when they put that, they don't have to tell us what it is. So we're going to have a little music, because that was some heavy stuff that I just went through. A lot. So let's get to a little bit of this here. Oops. That, you must remember, was Let's Stick Together and Bob Dylan. You knew that, though. And now, we're going to get real intimate with some recipes. Are you ready? Do you have pen and paper? Do you have a good memory? Actually, I will post these recipes on the Eating It in the Hudson Valley Facebook page in the notes. So if you miss anything, you can go back there and get it. The first recipe we're going to walk through, or talk through, or salivate through, is actually a kind of tapas. You know, little dishes you put out while you have some sherry or some other drinks, even beer. We'll get into beer a little bit later. And this is tiny meatballs in saffron sauce. I'm going to make you very hungry now. You take a pound of ground meat, all beef, or a combination of beef, veal, pork, or bison, a slice of bacon finely chopped, 2 cloves of garlic minced, 4 tablespoons parsley chopped, 3 tablespoons of lettuce ribs chopped. You know, the ribs, the center portion, like of a romaine lettuce that runs down the center. You're just using that part. Kind of unusual, but there it is. Sometimes people actually take that out for salads. 1 egg, sea salt, excuse me, freshly ground black pepper, 3 tablespoons of breadcrumbs, 1 tablespoon of milk, flour for dusting, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 2 tablespoons of finely chopped onion, 1/4 teaspoon of smoked paprika, 1/2 to 1 cup of broth, could be any kind of broth, probably beef would be best, 2 to 4 tablespoons of white wine or dry sherry, 1 teaspoon of chopped garlic, 1/4 teaspoon of saffron, and some more sea salt. Combine the ground meat, chopped bacon, garlic, 1 tablespoon of parsley, the lettuce ribs, egg, and salt and pepper with the bread. Combine that. Then combine the breadcrumbs with the milk and let them stand briefly. Then add them to the meat. Mix it well with your hands. So you've got the meat, the bacon, the garlic, the parsley, the chopped lettuce, the egg, the salt and pepper, combined with the breadcrumbs that have been dissolved with the milk. Okay, you with me? Then make about 24 small balls of 1-inch sized meatballs. Okay, you can. What I usually do is I take a sheet pan or a cookie sheet, put some parchment paper on top of it, and then make the balls and just place them on the sheet pan. Then dust them with flour. Probably the best way to do that is to put some flour in a bowl and then put the meatballs in it and kind of shake it and toss them around and take the meatballs out and put them through your fingers and let the excess flour fall out from there and put them back on the sheet pan. Then heat up about 2 tablespoons of olive oil and brown the meatballs. So that means put it in a frying pan, put some meatballs in, not all of them, and then shake the pan, let them brown a little bit, and shake the pan and till they brown on all sides. And you'll probably need to do this in batches. Then take them out of the pan and set aside in a dish. And the meatballs can be made 24 hours in advance, so you can refrigerate them and have them ready. Then take another pan and add the onion to the pan. That's the 2 tablespoons of finely chopped onion. And sauté until soft. Then sprinkle in about 1 tablespoon of flour and the paprika, just 1/4 teaspoon, and stir well to make a paste. Then add 1/2 cup of the broth, preferably hot. So have a pot and heat up the 1 cup of broth to see if you need all that. And add 2 tablespoons of the wine or sherry and boil it and add the meatballs back into the pan. So you've got the onions, you put in some flour and paprika, and then some broth and sherry. And then you boil it and you put the meatballs in. Then you lower the heat to simmer and cover the pan. And cook about 40 minutes until the meatballs are cooked through. See, when you browned the meatballs before, they weren't cooked through. But you could refrigerate them like that. Then taste for seasoning. So you take out a meatball, you taste it. Do you like it? Does it need more salt? Does it need more pepper? Okay, put some in. Then take a mortar and pestle and make a paste with the garlic. So you've got, now you've added 1 teaspoon of garlic, which is chopped, 1 tablespoon of the parsley, saffron, 1/4 teaspoon of the saffron, and salt. And you make a paste with that, with the mortar and pestle. You grind it all together. The salt actually lets the garlic soften. So if you do want to, you know, really chop garlic when it's very soft, you put in some garlic and some salt in a mortar and pestle and grind it together. And the salt allows the garlic to dissolve. So here you've got a little garlic, you've got some parsley, saffron, and salt that you've made into a paste. And now you're going to swirl that into the pan with the broth and the meatballs at the very end of their cooking. And then remove the whole thing to a serving dish and sprinkle it with some fresh chopped parsley and serve it with toothpicks. I think you're going to like it. Let me know if you do. And this will go up on the Facebook page. Now, I have some others. Let me read to you what they are. I'm not going to go through all of them. There's a potato and mushroom gratin. And that has cheese and things in it. Then there's a salmon mousse, which is kind of interesting. And there's fried mozzarella balls with prosciutto. Now, that's an interesting one. I did a dinner party. Well, actually, it was just two people. And the wife wanted to make a special birthday party for her husband. And he likes beer. Now, that beer topic has come up a lot lately about who likes beer and when they drink it and how much they like it. So maybe we should do this recipe. This is kind of like mozzarella in carrozza, but it's with mozzarella balls with prosciutto. And there's another dish for that particular dinner, which is a particular Spanish dish called patatas bravas, and that's another tapas that you do drink with beer. So those are two beer things. And then I've got a recipe for corn fritters, if we get to that, and there's a lot of variations on the corn fritters. And then there's a gluten-free crust for pumpkin pie. The gluten-free crust is kind of interesting. Actually, I like it so much better than the pumpkin pie crust that I've been tasting lately. You know, it's very much pumpkin pie time now as we, I don't know why it starts now, but it really starts immediately in October. As soon as fall starts, everybody starts, all the restaurants start having pumpkin pie on their menus, and I've tasted a couple of them, and they haven't been very satisfying. For some reason, the crust just seems too heavy. But this pecan and a gluten-free crust with pecans and rolled oats and dates to soften it actually is about the best crust I've ever tasted for a pumpkin pie. So we'll do that one too. But let's do the fried mozzarella balls, and then we're going to play a beer song. This one's called Fried Mozzarella Balls with Prosciutto. Mozzarella sticks are very common, but have you ever had mozzarella balls and prosciutto together? Try this recipe and see if it isn't the best ever. Dip them in some hot sauce for added tang. There's a photo, but you can't see the photo. Okay, take a package of fresh mozzarella balls. Got that? Some of them are called ciliegi. Ciliegi actually means cherries. So the mozzarella balls are about the size of a cherry. Then take a package of about 4 ounces of prosciutto, 1 to 2 eggs, lightly beaten, a tablespoon of grated Parmesan cheese, and please, do that fresh. Don't buy the already grated stuff. It gets dried out, and you never know whether it's really Parmesan cheese or not. But if you buy a wedge of Parmesan cheese and just grate it fresh every time, you know what you've got, and just wrap it up well, keep it in the refrigerator, and at the end you have a little bit of that rind that you can use to put into soups, and it really flavors things really well. It's worth getting it ungrated. Then take a teaspoon of dried oregano or mixed Italian herbs, and you could use fresh oregano too. Then you'd need a little bit more than a teaspoon. And then have oil for frying. And I like to use grapeseed oil. Grapeseed oil holds a very high heat. A lot of oils don't, like olive oil doesn't. You can't, if you turn it up really high and it starts to smoke, it can't maintain the heat, and it's not a high heat oil. Canola and grapeseed oil are. Canola's got some problems, so unless you really get the cold pressed version, but grapeseed oil seems okay. So here's what you do. You mix the breadcrumbs, the Parmesan, and the herbs together. So basically, you've got flavored breadcrumbs. Then wrap each mozzarella ball with prosciutto as tightly as you can. Then dip that into the beaten egg, then into the breadcrumb mixture. And do this twice. So you take the ball that's covered with prosciutto, you dip it in the egg and then in the breadcrumbs, and then you dip it in the egg and then in the breadcrumbs. Again. Then place the balls on a sheet pan. And again, it's the same process. Take a sheet pan and cover it with parchment paper. Put the balls on a sheet pan and put them in the freezer. Okay, so you've done all of them. They're all covered with the breadcrumbs. And you put them in the freezer. And you freeze for about 30 minutes. And then put them in a plastic bag until you're ready to fry them. So this is another thing that you can do in advance. And then to finish it, you heat the oil to hot. You test it with a piece of bread. Drop it in, you know, or a little bit of water just to see that it's not too hot. I never test the temperature of oil. So usually recipes say, you know, heat the oil to 375, 425, whatever. I heat it. I put it, you know, I get it hot. You don't want to boil it. You just want it to get it hot enough so that it fizzles a little bit. And you can throw in a piece of bread or you could sort of hit it with some water and see what happens. But remember that the temperature of the oil will rise. But at the same time, when you add frozen mozzarella balls, the temperature of the oil will lower. So someplace in between, you want to keep the consistency of the heat up. So drop in a couple of mozzarella balls and fry until the coating is golden. And this takes about 2 to 3 minutes. If it happens too quickly, the cheese will not melt enough. So make sure the oil is not too hot. All right, so just get it like bubbling. You don't want to burn anything. If it starts to burn, you know it's too hot. And then take them all out and serve them hot. And be careful not to burn your tongue. Serve, if you like, with some hot sauce. Again, hot sauce. So we've got two tapas here. We've got mozzarella with lots of balls. We've got balls. We've got the mozzarella balls, and we've got the meatballs. I think everybody likes round. I know the shape of something that's round, like circles, are a sign of peace. So both of these things can be eaten with beer as a nice little appetizer. You can practically have that for a party. And here we have a drinking song. Let's listen to that.
I wasn't born for digging deep holes. I'm not made for paving long roads. I ain't cut out to climb high line poles, but I'm pretty good at drinking beer. I'm not the type to work in a bank. I'm no good slapping on paint. Don't have a knack for making motors crank, no, but I'm pretty good at drinking beer. Hand me one more, that's what I'm here for. I'm built for having a ball. I love the nightlife, I love my Bud Light. I like them cold and tall. I ain't much on mowing thick grass. I'm too slow for working too fast. I don't do windows, so honey, don't ask. But I'm pretty good at drinking beer. A go-getter, well maybe I'm not. I'm not known for doing a lot. But I do my best work when the weather's hot, hot. I'm pretty good at drinking beer. So hand me one more, that's what I'm here for. I'm built for having a ball. I'm
sunlight like I'm cold and tall. I wasn't born for digging deep holes. I'm not made for paving long roads. I ain't cut out to climb high line poles, but I'm pretty good at drinking beer. I'm pretty good at drinking beer. I'll hand me one more, boy. That's what I'm here for.
That was someone named Billy Currington. I'm not up on country and country music at all, but I thought that was pretty good. So if you're, you know, you want to be on the highest chord in the land, I think you ought to know that song, huh? Don't you think? Or eat some mozzarella balls. Ba-boom. Yeah, wait, we need a little sound on that one. What have we got here in the sound effects here? We've got... Yeah, well, okay. How about that? Ha ha! Since I don't have an audience here today, I think we need a little sound effects. Come on, some more laughter. Oh, good. And a drum roll. Okay. Are we having fun yet? The gluten-free crust for a pumpkin pie. Now this one. This is the one. This is the one. Are you ready? Pen? Paper? All right, for the crust. A cup of pecans and a cup of rolled oats. Optional is a quarter cup of crystallized ginger. I have a note here that I didn't use it when I made this, but I think I would. And then 6 to 7 soft medjool dates, pitted and halved. A quarter cup, it just says a quarter, I must have meant a cup, quarter cup of coconut oil, softened, so you're going to melt it down a little bit. It's good for your skin, too. I use it for all kinds of things. And a quarter teaspoon of sea salt. And I might have added a few more dates, but you can also substitute 10 tablespoons of butter for the coconut oil, if you really want to do that. Either way. Okay, you got that? And then you put it in a food processor, all those ingredients, and you buzz it and get it together. Okay, so you might need to add another date. It's got to be kind of the consistency of something that you can mush down. And then you press it into your pie pan. All right, so you do that. You press the whole thing into the pie pan. Are you visualizing this? You got the pecans, the oats, the dates all together, the coconut oil to hold it together. And you've got that down. And then you prick it with a fork in a couple of places. And then, well, you've preheated your oven to 325. I forgot to tell you that, okay? Preheat the oven to 325. I'm going to write that down so I rewrite it. 325. And then you heat this crust with nothing in it, just a blind bake. You heat it for about 10 minutes, then take it out and cool it, right? Now, while it's cooling, you can make the filling. Now, this particular filling does have eggs, so it's gluten-free, but it's not totally dairy-free because it has the eggs. All right, so you take a cup of pumpkin puree. Now, a lot of people use canned pumpkins, and you can get them organic, too, or others. And then they say, you know, very often what I do is I take a butternut squash and I cut it in half and I roast it. I take out the seeds, I put it cut side down, and I roast it at about 375 until it starts to collapse. Maybe it's a half an hour, something like that. And then I take it out and I take the insides and I put it in a food processor and I buzz it. So you can either do that And that's pumpkin. You know, the kind of Halloween pumpkins, they've been bred now so that people don't even eat them. You see squashes and pumpkins all over the streets these days, and some of them are really good food. I see these Hubbard and Turban pumpkins lying all around on people's lawns. It's very tempting to take them home. Okay, so you've got a cup of pumpkin puree, and you've got two eggs, and a cup of coconut milk. 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, and make sure it's real vanilla extract. You know, they put a lot of additives and things in that stuff. What I do is I take the vanilla sticks. What are they called? This is where you need somebody else here to help you out with words that you can't remember. You take the vanilla sticks, and you put them in a jar, and you add vodka to that. But you've got to let that sit. It's either a month or 2 months or 10 years. You just keep adding more of the vanilla sticks and more vodka, and you get the best vanilla extract ever. I have a jar that's been going for, well, like I said, 10 years. I don't think it's that long, but it might be getting a little close. And then you've got about 2 teaspoons of pumpkin pie spice. Now, pumpkin pie spice, what's that? That's a combination of ginger, cinnamon, nutmeg, cloves. Pretty much that's it. Ginger, cinnamon, nutmeg, and cloves is really what makes up pumpkin pie spice. So if you have some of that, or you buy the ready-made pumpkin pie spice, when it comes to spices, I like to grind my own. So I've got, you know, those coffee mills that you grind your coffee with in the morning? I have an extra one that's just for spices, and I put that in there, the cinnamon. The cinnamon that's really soft is a kind of a cassia, really. It's not those thick pieces of cinnamon that you get that are all rolled up, because if you put that into the coffee grinder, it's not going to grind up that well. But there is a soft kind. If you go over, and all the markets have like a Mexican or Spanish section, you'll see that there's a different kind of cinnamon there that's very soft. It's kind of broken up. It's not in rolls. That's the stuff that I use to grind for this, and it's very nice. And you can grind it all up. So put in some cinnamon, some nutmeg, a few cloves. You can cheat with ground cloves if you really have to, but I tend to use cloves for a lot of things. Like if I make soup, I often throw in a couple of cloves. And the nutmeg. You know, nutmeg is one of those wonderful things. The Italians use it a lot. It's one of those things that's categorized as a, what's the word I'm looking for? Something that, like an up. Something that makes you feel really positive. Basil leaves and oats and nutmeg are all in that category. I'll think of the word a little bit later. All right, so then you take the spice. That's the spice story. And you take a half a teaspoon of salt, a half a cup of maple syrup. I tend to like the dark maple syrup. It used to be called, I think, grade B, but they've gone away from that, and they have grade A dark. And then a quarter cup of cane sugar, and I tend to use, or turbinado. And you can get that organic also. I mean, it's still sugar, but hey, you know, you're making a pie. Then that's the filling. So you mix that all together. You can beat it with a fork. You can take out a whisk and put that together. And then you pour that into the crust. And now the oven is at 350. Sorry, I forgot to tell you. You raise the heat of the oven. So once you've taken out the crust, you raise the oven to 350, and then you have whisked the pumpkin and all of its ingredients, and then you pour it into your pecan rolled out crust and put it on a sheet pan, put it into the oven, and bake about 30 minutes or until set, and then cool it. You can make it up to 2 days in advance and keep it covered in the refrigerator. Now, if you want to put something nice on top of it, you don't want dairy, maybe you want a coconut whipping cream. If you can whip, yes, you can whip coconut milk. If you take a can of full-fat coconut milk that's chilled overnight, maybe put in like 2 tablespoons of powdered sugar and a little bit of vanilla extract, and beat it, you will have coconut whipping cream. Or, if you're not adverse to using heavy cream, and the people who are coming to eat your beautiful pumpkin pie don't mind dairy, you can put make a maple whipping cream. You take about 8 ounces of heavy cream that's chilled, and again, about a quarter teaspoon of vanilla extract, or more if you like, or put in some bourbon or rum at that point, and then 3 tablespoons of maple syrup. Now you whip the cream, you start whipping the cream first, and then you put in the additives, the vanilla extract or the bourbon or the rum and the maple syrup. And you bring that, now you can whip it until it's thick and it's standing up, or you can whip it to where it's just still really loose and a little bit runny. I go back and forth between which way I like the cream to be, how thick I want it to be. Oh, here's another recipe for the coconut cream. You scoop off the coconut cream layer off the top and reserve that for another use. And then with an electric mixer, blend the chunks of coconut cream until they're broken down. Add powdered sugar and vanilla and beat another minute or two until light and creamy. Coconut whipping cream is best served immediately. Ah, it can be stored covered in the fridge, but it'll turn hard, so you'll need to whip it again to soften. So you can make the pie in advance, but you got to make the coconut cream right on the spot, or make it and then whip it again. So remember that. And then I've got a couple of other recipes for pumpkin pie, but I think that's a really nice one. And let's see where we're at in time. I think we could handle another song here. We've got Edith Piaf. How about that?
Ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal, tout ça m'est bien égal. Non, rien de rien, non, je ne regrette rien, c'est payé. Mes chagrins, mes plaisirs, je n'ai plus besoin de balayer les amours avec leur trémolo, balayer pour toujours, je repars à zéro. Ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal, tout ça m'est bien égal. Non, rien de rien, non, je ne regrette rien, car ma vie.
Edith, a little Edith Piaf. Non, je ne regrette rien. I'm not sorry for anything. And that kind of goes with pumpkin pie, doesn't it? Okay. Now, we've got a choice here. Let's see. We can have some corn fritters, potato and mushroom gratin, or salmon mousse. We've got about 5 minutes. I think I'm going to go with the corn fritters. I haven't made those in a while, and boy, are they good. And there's a couple of variations of them, too. You can make them gluten-free. You can make them, how else can you make them? You can make them dairy-free. If you want them gluten-free, use garbanzo bean flour or chickpea flour. You can find that. And if you want to make them dairy-free, use soy milk and apple juice. It's fine. And I have a symphony of corn fritters with variations. I can't give you all of them. There's no time. But there are about four versions that I have reserved and made up of corn fritters. So I'm going to give you the first one. Okay, ready? Oh, also a little bit word about corn first. Just about all corn available in supermarkets these days is GMO. That's genetically modified. Legally, they are exempt from having to let you know. So try purchasing your corn from a local farm and always ask whether they are GMO if you don't want that. There's still time to get some corn. You know, we get late corn now. And I like that one better. I like the autumn corn better than the corn that we get early. So here we go. 1.5 cups of all-purpose flour, unbleached all-purpose flour. And again, you can use chickpea flour instead. 1 teaspoon of baking powder, 1/2 teaspoon of sea salt, 2 large eggs, lightly beaten, 1/2 cup of whole milk or soy milk. You can even use almond milk, I guess, or hemp milk here. Just liquid, or apple juice if you want it a little sweet. 1.5 cups of fresh corn kernels, and that's from 2 to 3 cobs. And 2 tablespoons of grapeseed or sunflower oil. I don't know, this is my recipe, and I have 2 tablespoons, but I think you need a little more to fry these. But maybe not. I have to trust myself here. Combine the flour, the baking powder, and the salt. Stir in the eggs. That's the dry ingredients, right? Stir in the eggs and the milk. Then fold in the corn kernels, and the batter should be lumpy. Put about 1/2 inch or less of oil into a skillet. See, 1/2 inch, that's more than 2 tablespoons. We must correct this recipe. Je ne le regrette rien. And the batter should be, okay, lumpy, we did that. Fry in tablespoon portions on both sides. So you've got your batter, you take a nice tablespoon, and you put it into the hot oil, and you get a little patty. And you fry it on both sides until crispy and golden, and then take it out and drain it on paper towels or newsprint. You know, that works too. Sprinkle it with salt and eat them when they're hot. Boy, you're going to love these, and your friends and neighbors will too. Let's see, we've got time. No, we don't have time for anything. Is this clock right, Neva?
Yeah.
It is. Okay. Well, I think that we have gone through 4 or 5 recipes. We've gotten the food report. And now we're going to have Willie Nelson to take us out with his new song.
Here's a new song we want to spring on y'all tonight. Take it home where you spread it around. If you don't like who's in there, vote them out. That's what Election Day is all about. And the biggest gun we got is called the ballot box. If you don't like who's in there, vote them out. Vote them out.
Vote them out.
Vote them out. And when they're gone, we'll sing and dance and shout. And she'll bring some new ones in, and they will start the show again. And if you don't like who's in there, vote them out. It's a bunch of clowns you voted in. Election Day is coming around again. And if you don't like it now, you can change it anyhow. And if you don't like who's in there, vote them out. Vote them out.
Vote them out.
Vote we'll sing and dance and shout. Start the show again and bring some new ones in. And if you don't like who's in there, vote them out. Vote them out.